We are recording on the lands of the Wurundjeri Woi Wurrung people, and we acknowledge them as traditional owners. We'd also like to pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Midnight to midnight. Welcome. Screening. Welcome to midnight screening. Welcome to screening. Welcome to midnight screening. I am screaming. I am screaming.
I am screaming.
Ho, ho, ho. Welcome to Midnight Screening, where we let you stay up past your bedtime with the movies you probably shouldn't be watching. Don't stay up too late, though, Eliza and Anthony.
Who are you calling a ho?
Well, if you keep telling naughty jokes like that and keep staying up late, Santa will skip your house. I remember distinctly when we were children being really scared because we hadn't gotten back from a family Christmas. And it was like...
We were at like a hotel or something, you mean?
No, we were like coming from like our grandparents' place up at Summers. And it was like past midnight. And I was like, he's going to abandon us. I also was like, our house at the time didn't have a chimney. And I look back on my mum's very quick thinking skills of saying he knows how to make himself like a pancake and go through the slats in the aircon.
That's horrible.
Isn't that crazy?
That's awesome? Just Tombs from X-Files.
Yeah, it was very X-Files-y.
No.
Apparently, it made me feel... I was like, oh, okay, that's good. That's good to know.
It was comforting to you.
Yeah. How do you feel knowing he's coming soon?
I actually don't believe in Santa, I'm sorry to say.
But how do you think all those presents get there every year?
I think Mum and Dad buy them for you.
That is so stupid. They already get you presents, though.
I know. But they
you think they just
believe.
Get you two presents?
Yeah.
It sounds like you don't believe in Christmas enough.
No, maybe the movies you watched last week about evil murderous Santas has swayed me in that direction further as well.
It's true. It's very true. Well, speaking of like episodes we've done recently, I wanted to ask you. We were just talking about my mom, but it's kind of sad. My mom's really sick, and. I'm trying to think about the perfect thing to get her and her dainty little feet, but I don't know what I should do, what I should get her. And I also don't have a lot of money.
Do you have some pennies? Do you have at least pennies?
I do. If something was $20, I'd definitely have like $19 and like 90
okay.
and 5 cents.
Well, you could give this a go. You could go to like a store where they have shoes, and if provided there are ones that adjust her style or size. Maybe.
I could get them for her. It's
Maybe.
True. She'll look really good in them if she dies and meets Jesus. That's a good idea.
You
but
think Mum will meet Jesus?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
she did
she's a
say
good
she did say she was gonna go to church a lot more than she ever does. But I feel like God will forgive that.
Did you ever hear Anthony when my cat went missing and Pearl was gone for like a few days and our mum said, "Dear God, please if you bring back my cat, I'll go to church every Sunday." And the cat immediately sprang through the door and said, meow. And she has not gone to church since.
Immediately?
Yeah, like it was amazing, like Kramer from Seinfeld comic timing of being mentioned and coming in like,
wow, that's incredible.
And she was very unfazed. She was very like, why are you so obsessed? She wasn't like, I'm home, you know. She was just like, okay, get over me.
But if that didn't drive her to church, so.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, cool. Well, good thing there's an episode on our Patreon that's all about that very philosophical question. It's sort of like the trolley question. The trolley... what's it called? Problem.
How so?
They're both a test of ethics and will.
If you buy the shoes,
you're
your
good.
Mom will die and go to heaven. But if you don't buy the shoes, when she dies, Jesus... I don't know.
Oh, I guess in the Christmas shoes, it's the theological problem belongs to the guy in the line.
Yeah. Do I help this child buy the shoes?
Yeah. You're going to need to listen to the Christmas shoes to get around it. It's a great playlist. We should also put your Christmas playlist on our link as well in the show notes. Every year, people immediately ask for us to skip to a different playlist. Not even in a joke way, like legitimately every year. I'm like, well, yes, I love, like, this playlist.
What about Michael Bublé Christmas CD?
And you're like, oh.
Like, my playlist has like 300 songs. It's so many good songs, please.
It's true. It's very true. But yeah, that's a really good one we have. We're really nearing the end of the year now. So we have really got some good Christmas cheer spreading here on the show.
One more bit of Christmas joy in song form is a gift from our own Anthony Carr.
That's it.
Would you like to talk a little bit about the first track of your new album, Told You Once?
Talented Friends Making Things.
Released only 10 days ago.
We love it.
Yes.
What's it about?
Thanks. It might not be a surprise to you if you've listened to more than one episode of this show that I do music stuff. If you've very recently joined us and not been here for the sort of exposition of the Midnight Screening canon, then you might not know that I have made the music for this show. If you don't read the
descriptions
of the episode,
the music is of much higher quality than the rest of what we do on the show. So I
maybe disagree about that, but
very much advocate for it.
I make music myself. It's been like quite a long time since I've worked on music just for myself. I've done quite a lot of like collaborative projects in recent years, but I've had like quite a long break of working on things just because I want to do it and because it's fun. A few years ago when I did put music out, there were like remixes and things and also kind of collaborative of a nature. So yeah, I'm like working on some like fun dance music at the moment. It's like a bit weird and like kind of like angsty, but a bit like, I don't know. It's kind of like energetic at the same time. It's not like, it's not super murky and sludgy. It's got like a bit of a left field housey techno sort of vibe if you're into that kind of thing.
They're very dynamic. Like they really rise and fall a lot.
That's cool.
How similar would you say they are to Christmas Shoes? Are any of the songs like have a Christmas Shoes vibe or not really?
I don't think so.
Okay.
That's
all right.
Not super that.
I feel like it reflects the internal soul of the question at hand. His body is racing with adrenaline. Am I going to buy this little boy the pair of Christmas shoes or not?
True.
And his soul is, it's like both scary and exciting, you know?
Yeah.
The Christmas shoes is like his like idealized retelling of the story later where he sounds like a hero.
Yeah.
That told you once is like
the truth.
The actual the experience was like. Like it was harrowing and dancey and intense and like passionate and
very true.
Maybe my track is like the kind of interior monologue of the little boy who's like, where am I gonna get this money from? And it's like very tense.
Totally.
Could be that.
It's one of those one crazy night stories of like, I got to get the cash, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like,
well, speaking of a one crazy night story, it may or may not fall to one or both of you to record some words that might go elsewhere on this release that I'm working on at the moment. And that may or may not begin with a libretto written by Eliza about a one crazy night.
It's so good.
So yeah.
One crazy night. There I was in another line, just trying to buy that last gift or two, not really in the Christmas mood.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it, but it's, you know, similar.
Let me say some shoes that very much are Christmassy get bought.
The Christmas shoes is just a fucking curse.
This happens every time we do one of those episodes. It just absolutely destroys our life for a while.
But please listen to this Far Superior song. It's great.
Yeah, it's so good. I was telling Anthony I'd finished a really big week at work and needed to rage and it really got me home. It was great.
Thanks so much.
So that'll be up. We'll be sharing that with everyone. We only have a few episodes left before the end of the year. Wanted to say we'll spread more love for you guys, I'm sure, but thank you so much to the patrons for joining us this first year of the show. You've been so good to us. We have loved reflecting on all the things we've done so far.
Yeah, I'm so touched that anyone listens to it. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's crazy that you have contributed to this. It actually really does help us. And we're excited to keep building it next year. We'll keep reminding you, but we're going to take a little break in a few, like after a few more episodes, because we haven't paused yet since we started. So we're going to take a 2-week break over the new year, but wanted to let all the patrons know that we will be pausing your subscription during this time. So it's not like you're going to have to pay for our time off. Mm. You will get a little break while we get a little break, and then we'll come back with more fun stuff for you. But during that time, you can still vote on the slop bucket. This is the slop bucket we'll get around to pretty much right from when we, like, you know, it'll be one of the first episodes up in the new year. So the three options currently, still no budget Canadian DTV horror film shot on Super 8. Leading the pack now, it has come out in front.
Yay!
Option number two, a former architect writes, directs, edits, caters, and stars as a hacker who causes government leaders to commit suicide en masse. And number three, vampire romance with Cahoots level animation. You could turn the tide.
Yeah, you have a bit of time to turn the tide.
Turn the slop tide. if you so will it. Otherwise, hey.
Let it happen. Let it rain. Caterer guy, let him run rampant and destroy the start to 2025.
Do you feel like it's a result of that healthcare CEO assassination guy?
Oh my gosh, maybe.
Inspiring people to be like, I need to see media about this.
But it's not that they want to see media about it. It's that they want us to see media about it and talk about it. I don't understand.
Because the things that we say have sway and power in this current political climate.
Just two little Luigis on the mic chatting about movies.
Wow.
Anyway.
So, with all that being said, welcome back to part two of our Christmas horror
Season Screamings
Midnight Marathon. This is a three-part season we're doing on Christmas horror films. Today's episode reflects something that we mentioned a bit last week, which is, as a subgenre, we're always excited for it, but also feel that there's not enough entries in it.
Mm.
And I think today's episode points out that thing of like, what I most associate with Christmas horror is something that is set at that time, but doesn't necessarily like, isn't that interested in like, you know,
yeah, the traditions. Yeah, that's sort of just like the skin the random slasher is wearing or whatever.
Yeah, I think last week's episodes really suited the idea of like, the ideas that the films are interested in are this moral superiority of Santa slash religion, this binary good and bad, the very like traditional like stereotypes of a time of year that's based around family and structure and obedience and stuff like that. Like very much not just a film with the window dressing of Christmas, but about Christmas. It's not that today's episodes don't have that, but they're more really good underseen gems that are set at Christmas.
They also both have the child kind of connection.
They do.
Where they kind of prey on the idea that like Christmas is about families and children, and like children are so innocent and pure.
Mm.
And one of the movies is about kids being evil at Christmas, and the other is like a perverted nativity. So it's like commenting on Jesus' birth in a way.
This time of rebirth.
Yeah.
Indeed.
What are the movies called?
The films are called The Children.
Very boring name.
Very boring name. Well, very like, it's the sort of thing that had been on my watch list forever because you mix it up with like four other films,
yeah.
Even just based off its poster. And I remember when I said we should watch it, I was like, no, I hear this one's actually worth, I think I thought it was that movie, The Uninvited with Emily Browning in it, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's not that, it's The Children. And it was really good. It's from 2008, British horror film, creepy kids movie.
Yay.
We're going to chat about it. Other one is a personal fave of ours that I feel like, how could this disappoint? Like it really held up. Amazing movie.
Yeah.
The Day of the Beast.
Dia de la Bestia.
Spanish-Italian black horror comedy from 1995. Super keen for these two. What are we starting with?
Should we go chronologically or do you want to
No, let's start from the very beginning.
Let's do the best start.
Yahoo!
Hell yeah. Okay. Directed by Alex de la Iglesia. This movie starts with such a bang. I really remember the first time we watched it.
Oh.
From quite early on, like the opening 5 minutes or so, just being like, fuck yes, this is going to be so good.
The Day of the Beast is a film written to be pitched at a friend. Like you yeah. can get someone to watch this by describing its opening conceit that initially immediately sells you on the vibe of what you're going to get. What happens in it?
What an interesting premise.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll try it on you okay. and we'll see. How does the Day of the Beast open?
So it begins with our main character, the priest Angel, Angel, going up to an older priest and saying, you know, forgive me, Father, I have sinned. Well, actually, I haven't sinned, but I intend to commit all the evil I can. And the other guy's like, what do you mean? He's like, I've decrypted a cryptogram in a biblical text called the Apocalypse of St. John, and it's saying that the Antichrist will be born tomorrow in Madrid, and I have to do evil deeds to, like, invoke the devil so that I can get invited to the birth of the Antichrist and kill it so that it doesn't end the world. And he whispers, like, the evidence of this in the older priest's ear, and the older priest is like, oh, my goodness. He's like, well, you have to get out there. Go and do it. And the guy's like, yeah, yeah, okay. I guess maybe I should. And as he's walking down the aisle, a giant fucking, like, stone cross on the wall comes away from the wall and just flattens the older priest. So it seems to confirm to our main guy, like, yeah, you better get out there and stop this evil from happening. And so over the opening credits, it's metal music and it's him just doing evil, stealing people's stuff, knocking someone down like a set of subway stairs, being a dickhead. He goes into a record store and is like looking through metal records, and he sort of meets his first buddy comedy partner, who's like a wannabe Satanist metalhead guy. And he's like flipping through the LPs and is like, what about these guys? Are they any good? I want to buy this, but I'm not going to pay for it because I'm evil. And the metalhead guy's like, hell yeah, Father, you're cool.
It's just so such good. A good pitch for a film. Like the first 10 minutes of your movie is just little vignettes of a priest
and
doing
evil
things.
He doesn't
want to
do evil. He's like, oh.
It's not like he's like, heh. He like, my personal favorite one is he's just waltzing along with his suitcase and he sees an ambulance and he sees a car that's wrecked, and someone essentially comes over to him to be like the credits are rolling while this is happening, literally. Like it's like the very opening of the movie. Someone comes over and it's like, Father, like read this man his last rites. And he like goes up to the guy. There's like a guy half dead on the hood of a car, and he goes up to him. And he takes his wallet and he whispers in his ear, you're going to rot in hell. And he walks away.
So
and the guy's
harsh.
Eyes being like, it's a priest. Oh, yay, I'm gonna go to heaven. Like, it's just such a perfect in to what the concept of this is, which is essentially like the Omen-esque but with a more distinctly like black comic sensibility.
It's very comic. Like, it's more comedy than horror, huh?
Yeah, and it establishes that tone like, perfectly for me up top, I guess. I actually think a bigger part of the initial construction of that opening that works for me, that like we might talk about on a second watch, what works a little less for me is like the objectives or like motivation behind the back half of the movie is that in the first half, it is really effective that you don't know the mystery that much. You can sort of assume it, but in that
it's not all as explained as I probably did.
Yeah,
it.
That opening would be with
like,
the priest.
But why does he have to do that? That's so mean.
Yeah, and as you said, it is really confusing why you're like, he's not like happy that he's hurting people and doing evil. He's sort of just like, it's like a child going like, and what's an evil thing to do? Okay, like he doesn't know how to follow every single evil whim. Like everything he does, it's like a child discovering
being bad.
At one point
he like burns cigarettes. Gives himself a cigarette, burns on his foot in the shape of crosses.
Oh, and it's so well shot. The
like
way it reveals
not having a good time
that
at all.
Is so well done. It's
yeah,
just like
it's really
a super well
directed.
Shot movie. Like
definitely.
It's edited for comedy so well. Like,
is this a good time to reveal that I have this on my foot?
Oh,
what is
it's
this?
Not a cross. But
it's almost
just,
a cross.
What is
it? It's an angry face.
Oh.
Wait, what is it?
I was
did you
hanging,
just draw that?
No,
today?
I didn't. I was hanging out in the backyard with my partner Tilly the other day, and she was doing some painting, and then she was just like, I'm gonna just draw this on your foot. And so
I'm sorry, no fucking joke. In the Day of the Beast, the plot is partly that
it kind of looks like that mark.
There's a mark
the
of the beast in the movie, and it looks like that.
Well, I'm glad I spoke up.
Yeah.
Now we'll be prepared for
I love your work. That is so
buy
wild.
My single.
It actually does look like that.
That's so wild.
It's a little disturbing.
But yeah, it's just like super well directed. Like it's super tight. It knows exactly what it is. The plot setup has a really fun like trio format with the characters. Do you want to describe like who these three characters are?
Yeah. So at some point, the priest literally says like, oh, we're the three wise men for this like unholy subversion of the nativity. So it's a priest, this metalhead who is constantly dropping acid. And in one scene, like the metalhead and the priest are staying together in the same boarding house and the metalhead's grandpa walks in just dick fully out and the metalhead is like, oh, I have to do this to him to calm him down and like gives him like a tab of acid. And the guy looks like Santa and you're like, is this movie Santa? All right. But so they, because the Satanist is sort of like, hell yeah, I want to kill myself. Like, let's go. He like gets on board with the plan to find the Antichrist pretty early. And the priest is like very naive, but it all kind of works out. Like, I guess he's just a faithful guy and his faith turns out. But he gets driven to work with like a shitty fraudulent TV psychic. And so they're sort of like the three points of this weird unchristian version of the three wise men trying to make their way to the birth of this important baby.
It's like a fake, TV psychic Satanist who also, I think one of the things the movie paints really well in that first half is like the evil that he's doing, the priest is doing to try and like, you know, speak to the devil or summon the devil is very in line with a world that is just generally really cruel. Like for a film that has like a sort of dark comedy to it, it does a really good job at painting everyone as just like to a degree not giving a shit. Like the Satanist has his real, the fake TV Satanist has his really good scenes, but he's essentially like they break into his house and are holding him hostage to be like, you need to help us contact Satan. And he's being like, I am a hack.
He's like, it's bullshit.
It's all bullshit. Like, I wrote this book off, like, the top of my head. Like, it's crap. It's not real. And the way that you, again, like, it doesn't sort of align you perfectly with the priest's point of view.
You're just like, it's not going to work. You know what you're talking
and
about.
And he's so believing it, like, so sincerely, you know. And he just tells everyone the facts as soon as he can. Like, every time he gets stopped by someone, he's like, well, what I'm doing is this. I'm going from, like, I need to summon the devil, so I've been trying to do these evil things, so that's why I couldn't pay for the book. And, like, the logic of it is really endearing to be like, what do I actually think of this guy's, like, committal to it? But I also think I wanted to ask you that sort of determination, the naivety of it, like, the innocence of it is really great. But then in the back half, the character suffers from being a bit one-dimensional. Like, I feel like the more interesting element of a story about, like, someone breaking bad is the idea of them being conflicted at like, oh, the allure of the devil is really strong.
He's
or something.
Not that conflicted.
He's sort of just like, I'm doing these things like because A, like it's a means to an end and it's never conflicted by it. Like,
well, he definitely starts losing his stamina and just being like, what's the point? Like,
I'm tired.
We're not going to get there in time, like giving up or whatever.
I just would have rather to like, you know, the good, the bad and the ugly-esque, like if there is this trio of wise men, have them on like a moral spectrum where each of them has a different relationship to the evil. Not in like a big overwrought way. Because again, at the baseline, it's so much fun. It's constantly got new fun set pieces.
When
really great.
The psychic's like apartment has this big neon Schweppes sign and there's like a whole goofy set piece where they're like dangling off it and like have to climb outside. It's sick. I actually really liked the character dynamics of like the three men are all convinced when they manage to get a virgin's blood and use it for this ceremony that the psychic has been like, this is what the books tell you to do. It's not going to work.
And
just do it anyway.
Just quickly, it is such a perfect like visual reflection of the like sort of redux remix of the nativity story. Like the imagery of this is like the Eucharist that they do for that is like, you know, usually you've got like the wine and the bread and it's like a virgin's blood and bread dipped and like the acid is just mixed in amongst it all. Like it's such a dirty image that again, your movie it's just really works funny. Off the back of like watching a priest do all of that. Like it's so funny to watch him doing it. Anyway,
but
continue.
Then, or the, like the miraculous moment for all three of them, like I guess seeing the star in this is like a black goat wanders into the room and then stands up on its hind legs and it's this gnarly little like prosthetic face goat. So like the psychic is convinced because he's like, holy shit, like he's never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
And I liked that by the end it was the other two having to convince the priest. Like the priest said something like, oh, you know, maybe I just had like an epileptic fit. Like they say that's what the saints had when they saw visions or they had revelations. And the psychic guy on like a live broadcast, which is a cute touch, like is talking to him through like a wall of TVs in a store. And it's like, shut up. Like you're the one that made us believe in this. Like you're right. And it's like this really nice reversal of fate where you're like, now he has people like backing him. It's quite cute. The body aspect of it really works.
Oh, totally. The idea of like, having these three characters inherently doing really bad things, but you really root for them and think they're kind of cute. Like again, his best friend guy, who is the like the main buddy dude helping him.
Yeah.
This like
the like wild card metalhead rocker, dude.
Like metalhead dude who's like high the whole movie. Like he is it's just that thing of being like high and blindly excited to follow whatever the next scene that's happening.
When
is.
The priest,
that works really well.
When he's like, I forgot to tell you about something. I actually accidentally pushed your mom down the stairs and it was like the most gnarly stair falling down sequence ever. Like they got so many shots of a dummy smacking into a balustrade and the metalhead guy does take it in for a minute and then he's like, ah, fuck her, you know, whatever, it's okay, the world's gonna end, don't worry about it. It's so kind of twisted way.
It's interesting. I do get what you mean. I agree that it is like,
but you wanted
fun...
their perspectives. To argue a bit more about is this real or not?
I guess maybe the thought I brought up was just a reaction to like, I think it has mildly like a third act problem, which is a result to me of a film where, ironically, you know, we've been talking about all these Christmas movies that have a very binary sense of good and bad.
Yeah.
And it's actually a film that has a really tidy perspective of evil that just is so easy. Like, I don't really feel the presence of it in some, like, conflicting way. It feels very evil to not pick it. It doesn't really feel like it makes sense what the concept of evil is, which means by the end it is just a story of, like, good trying to defeat evil, which feels quite, like, plain and simple. And maybe there is something to... Like, the third act, it has an element of that idea of, like, maybe it wasn't real. Maybe it was just sort of like,
what was the point of
they
all
were
that?
Seeing visions
it?
Of a thing that was just like a practical concept of, it doesn't spend too much time on it, but essentially it's that like the upper class or like
there
the
is
elite,
like a roving gang of like preppy people going around and setting homeless people
like murdering
on fire
homeless
and
people
writing like clean up Madrid on graffiti on the streets. So it is like this political lens on it being like, it's actually true evil, true demons.
Yeah.
Are like conservative people who don't want progress and will, like, just humans that will go out and hurt people. Like, they have demons in them all.
And that, like, whatever the visions are, call them whatever you will, or like try and locate the origin of them in your mind. Mm. But you were in some way led to this place so that you could stop them. But I just think it removes any sort of like thorny, interesting choices and just makes it a film that mostly for me is just like really fun and clever.
Yeah.
But like it stops being very like,
I mean,
active for any of the characters for most of the second half. But again, I still love it. Just on a second watch, I was like, oh yeah, the back half of this to me is kind of unremarkable.
Yeah. There is like a springiness to the movie. Like it's not a intense, fucked up horror movie.
No, it's
like,
not.
It's funny and twisted and like blackly comedic. But, like, there's also a scene where the psychic's girlfriend is getting chased around his apartment by the other two guys. And it's just, like, a pure, like, European farce sex comedy thing. Like, it's just, like, a boob lady running around. And there's a lot of slapstick. Like, people get punched in the face with really funny comic timing a lot.
Yeah.
It's not an incredibly deep movie or anything.
No, I agree. And I'm almost, like, not advocating for it that, it like, it would be better if it was more serious.
Yeah.
More so just...
it has those awesome religious themes. It's like,
yeah,
you know, how would you react if you heard this?
Yeah, I just don't think it would have to lose the tone for it to have the characters feeling a bit more like core. I think the conflict towards the end of the film is I'm getting tired of the mission we're on, which is like every movie ever.
Well,
you know?
The mission is very funny as well because they're trying to do like this whole Da Vinci Code sort of thing, like, we know he's going to be born tonight, this evil baby or whatever, but we don't know where. So we have to do this ritual and all this stuff to find out where. And they realize it's like the gate of Europe in Madrid or something. And then you're like, oh, yeah, they still have to kill it. How are they going to do that? And it's like, they are going to shoot it with the gun. So you're like, oh, all right. I kind of thought it would be like, we have to get all these elements to make a weapon that will is strong enough or like cast a spell or something. But they're just like, brat, brat, to this giant
code. Well, they don't kill it. The bad guys kill it.
Do they? I thought it was the priest shooting.
No, the bad guys shoot them and then they open up the blanket and it's revealed that it was like,
It was
a family
people.
Of homeless people. And it's the whole idea of like, we were going to kill the Antichrist and it was a homeless baby.
Wow, I completely missed
this. Yeah, it's the, which again is that thing where I'm like, so you do know there's like
that's
a conversation
something.
To
what
be
are you
had
complaining
here.
About? That's like a shocking little thing.
Well, it doesn't really connect to what it's done before.
Mm.
There is that really great shot of the priest is watching as these like preppy people burn a homeless man to death. And it's like registering on him the terror of it.
Yeah.
I just feel like it doesn't track his thought process.
I don't think
very
I minded
cleanly.
How you're talking about the movie lacked urgency and you felt like the characters and you were tired going to the third act. I, rewatching this movie, found it a Spanish Christmassy Ghostbusters. I feel like that was the vibe. That it was like very deadpan, like when crazy stuff happens, they don't like hoot and holler that much or they're not hugely expressive. Yeah. Like especially the psychic guy, he's so chill. And the way it like ends with them all being up on this like precarious building with like crazy swirly matte painting backgrounds, it just felt like Ghostbusters, like
it's
a
true.
Sarcastic comedy with crazy supernaturally stuff in it.
It's true.
And I was like, this is
and the main thing you don't want it to sacrifice is just like the tone because the character like it's all like when you leave this you talk about like those three characters. Them in different little scenarios. It's like a really great, like one crazy night story. It's like a very easy pitch to people. And resoundingly, every review you read for it is people being like, where has this been all my life? Like, it's a really
it's
fun recommend.
Want. Like the scene where there's all these people Christmas shopping and there's carols playing. And then they're being, our two guys, the metalhead and the priest, are being chased by the cops. And the cops instead like go for three wise men in like a nativity scene and the metalhead is just like blasting a shotgun in the air and all the shoppers run away. You're like, this is nuts and it's what you want from like a fucked up Christmas movie.
Another one I really like is, again, it is like a priest who like is like a little boy. You're so protected from the world. You don't know what life is.
Yeah.
But like every scenario he runs into that mildly relates to the devil, he's like, I assume this is my way to the devil. So like,
yeah, he goes to a club called Hell where a band called Satanica are performing.
Yeah.
He's just like, this has to be involved. Come
on. I love one where he goes to, it's like a professor teaching the theology of the devil. And he's like, I'm trying to find him. Help me. Like, where is he? You guys all know where he is? Let's do it. Let's find him. And it's just him getting angry. Like later on, they just scream at him. They're like, you're a faker. Like,
and he's literally never watched TV before. Where he was like, wow, that guy sounds like he knows what he's talking about. Let's get him. And it all turns out, like, God, maybe God was watching over him.
Yeah.
I like that guy. What do you think of the very, very ending? Do you think we should spoil it?
Oh, I really like it.
Yeah.
What them is like, yeah, I think we could spoil it. We've spoiled everything else. The very, very end of it is essentially like the priest and the like satanic like TV
charlatan.
They are now just like homeless guys
it's
living
like
together. Everyone
later.
Thinks they're dead and they're like, no one even knows we saved the world. Oh my God.
Yeah, they're just like grumpy and bitter, but they're like, well, we survived. It's okay. And they're like wandering down the street
it's
with
so
like, their bags. It's crazy. I found it quite nice and light. Like it ended it all on a more comedic note.
And thematically it does have that thing of, again, I'm not saying
no
that
good
it doesn't
goes
have the
unpunished.
Good.
No evil deed.
Indeed. Yeah,
wicked 2024.
More so just that thing where like I feel like the lead up to it being an ending that very much focuses on those ideas isn't super clean. But I really like that idea of being like for a film that's been about like the poor you know, in a world of evil, the poor being the people on the slab, you know, that it ends with this, that idea of like
them losing all their status.
The two people you walk over in the street, they probably
could have saved the world.
You're probably dead without them. Like, I just sort of like that sort of cutting final little like, oh, well, no one even knows who the fuck we were. Now they just look over us, but that's okay. Like, that's so,
it was a funny, charming, like shabby little ending. I liked it.
It's a great movie. It's easy recommend.
I think anyone would enjoy it.
I do too.
It's cool.
It is. Yeah. It's a, you feel like you found a really special one, you know, like one of those times when you watch something and you're like, oh my God, no one is talking about it. How great.
It sounded great. The elevator pitch at the beginning very much got me. Yay. I was like, yeah, this sounds silly and satisfying.
You constantly laugh. Yeah, now you know everything that happens in it.
It's great.
Yeah. All right. Well, on to another underrated gem, I think. Let's talk about The Children.
Yes.
Too much music, no.
Well, aren't you two forgetting something?
How about channel 27?
Blood pressure of 160 over 80. Heart rate of 88. Normal sinus at this time. Respiratory rate of 18.
Everything is going to be all right. You only to stay inside. You only have to stay all right. Do not look outside. Do not look outside. Do not need to look outside. Look out, look out, look out, look out, look out.
With our next film, 2008, The Children, we are talking yet again, I realize, well, I guess you mentioned it, about a Christmas horror film that relates to sort of a The Omen-esque creepy children, or like the prospect of innocence holding this pure evil. The Children is a film very much about like the your family getting together at Christmas. Like, it is in that way very Christmassy, because it's about the like minutiae or the tradition of Christmas as a time when your extended family all come together.
And they always say, oh, it's good to get together for the kids, you know, so they can see each other, the cousins, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, like, the parents are all bitching about each other in their bedrooms.
Yeah, we really need this time and, you know, and just the sort of like mild, just a time where you put on not the veneer of being happy to be there. Like, there is a genuine belief that they're all really happy to see each other and that it's a special time. But also you are performing maybe that your relationship is better than it is. You're performing that you like your kids more than you do.
You've had a great year at work.
Yeah.
Your kids are little angels. They're so quirky.
That your business is thriving. So it's about all those elements of Christmas. And what happens when at this meetup, so it's two
sisters and their husbands.
And their husbands and their kids. And essentially the kids start acting
Won't somebody
creepy.
Please think of the children?
Won't somebody please think
the
of the children?
The escalation is so good as well. That like at the start, there were so many things the kids did where we're like, oh yeah, I hate when kids do that. Like the kid sick cough, where their tongue is out and they cough in your face. They're like, and you're like, oh my God.
We do not talk about sticky.
I just got COVID. I just got like a cold. Get away from me.
Sticky kids enough.
Yeah.
Like just a child that you're like,
and
I never
screaming?
Trust that your hand has not been somewhere disgusting and you haven't even thought about it. Yeah, not since, well, I guess that film came out later, but really captures that thing that The Babadook does so well. Where you're like, there is nothing like a child screaming. And you're like, no, this is my, like, this isn't a, like, right
this.
Now. This is happening.
You need me.
This is a every day.
I can't leave you.
That's how you live. We act like there isn't someone screaming right now. Like, it's a house that has very, like, immediately once the car pulls up to the house in this very snowy, you know, secluded house in the snowy
British countryside.
British countryside. We have six children all like screlting, constantly demanding attention, constantly scream. What would the relting be?
Did you say screlting?
I did, yeah. Isn't that like a version
belting?
Of singing?
Like
belting?
Yeah, like
yeah,
when
it's like
singing
scream,
a high
belting.
Note.
Like really. I think that's what it is.
That's my skrelt.
That's what Avril does. No,
that was just singing, I guess.
That was
that
just
really
a clean belt.
Thank you.
Very vocally retracted of you. Well done.
Sorry.
Yeah.
As soon as the kids are there.
They're just all skrelting away. And
skrelting their heads off. Shut up.
And another one that I think we're really impressed by, because the elements of the idea that most intrigue you are clearly the things that interest the filmmaker as well, which I would say for me is the like interpersonal dynamics within the family. Like,
yeah, that how each parent relates to each kid differently.
Yeah, yeah. There's a, like, a really one of the way. Main, I guess, you know, I guess it's the film's final girl is there's like a
the teen girl. She's like our point of view character.
Yeah, and the idea is she's sort of like the in-between point. She's, you know, like 17, 16. She's both too old to hang out with the kids but also not fully regarded as an adult.
Yeah.
She is at the age where she's like, this is...
I just want to go on my phone and go party with my mates.
With my friends. She's arrived, like... The second we meet her, she's like moping because she wanted to go away to like a party with her friends, but instead she has to spend her Christmas with her family. And that means that she's sort of put in the position of like seeing both parties as really vulnerable.
Yeah.
And
she, I found the relationship between her and her mum very interesting. And yeah. I was like, I don't think I've seen this in a horror movie before, or I've forgotten it because it wasn't as well done as it is here, where she is the her mom's partner is her stepdad. Like, she's a child from a previous relationship and she was the product of like a teen pregnancy. And so she is like really embittered about the idea that her mom, she's like a mistake. And
that it's almost like her mom now, like now she's a stepsister.
Now she has a really stable, happy, like more traditional family, I guess, with like a little younger sister and new husband.
Well, just the idea that it's like they're the real family, yeah. Like my mom and her new husband and like their kid together who's like, you know, a normal little girl, and then I'm just like...
I'm like an emo girl with a tattoo. And
the
I'm
outlier. She's definitely an Avril listener, so I knew yes. I knew immediately Eliza would love it.
God, I mean, yeah. She's just like me for real. Yeah. But the interesting thing of like one of the characters being like, so why did you have kids? Like, why did you... choose not to abort me, which she directly says, and she has a little tattoo of a fetus on her stomach, which is like,
it's fucked.
All right, girl, calm down a little
yeah.
bit. That's really unfortunate.
Yeah, totally.
And then like, and then why have you adults chosen to have kids and shape your lives around them? It's a very anti-natalist movie.
Yeah, totally. Well, it does a really good job of showing how like the second that the convention of like we are the ones in control of you like collapses, then it becomes the parents all de-evolving and like being either selfish or essentially just generally they, when they start to panic, they rely on the most base instinct in a way that is like all of them. Who is the real children? Like they become children themselves.
Yeah.
Whereas the kids become these like very secure, single-minded.
Kids just work as a unit.
Monsters
really well.
Of evil. They become these little like rats just getting shit done. We'll talk about the way that the actual horror itself unfolds, yeah. Which is some really clever stuff. But to speak more to the like dynamics, the one that initially made us both be like, oh damn, no. We're in is the
creepy uncle.
There's a creepy uncle. He's like the conventionally attractive, cool uncle.
He like and smokes a bit of weed out in the shed and he's yeah. She's like, oh, can I have some, uncle?
And yeah. Like, and it just means that once the horror, like the shit starts hitting the fan, there's that really interesting dynamic where like her auntie, so like the wife of this creepy uncle sort of has the like pick me energy of instead of being yeah. pissed off at her husband, she's threatened by
the teen girl
yeah. and thinks she's evil. And then
they're
there's
all awful.
Her stepdad being like, oh,
God,
I'm protecting my kids, but also there's clearly one kid that I think is good and pure yeah. and one that I think is evil.
He has such a favorite child. He loves the little blonde daughter that he has and like protects
her
at risk of everyone else. And then the yeah. first kid that has the child killer
sickness.
Infection or whatever is like their youngest son, I guess.
That is sort of like not explicitly expressed as such, but is like sort of presented as like autistic or neurodivergent yeah. in some way. And there's that idea of him being like,
God, this
why can't
kid.
You be normal?
Yeah, very
and really frustrated at him, which yeah, is so like obvious considering the way that he's like obsessed with his
yeah.
new daughter. And yeah, I just think it does a really good job at knowing that like the I feel like the thing we complain about the most with horror films is wasted potential.
Yes.
Because people are so obsessed with the horror that they miss the potential for like thorny decisions that happen inside of horror scenarios. And this is a film that knows, especially because it's like pretty low budget. Like, it's not like a big splashy horror
film. And it
film.
Looks pretty cheap.
It looks pretty cheap. It does a lot with the fact that, like, all the characters are starting in one place and end in different places. Like, they all have to make... Even the characters that you are, like, I know... You know, by the end of the movie, the final girl team and her mum, you're resolved to the idea that, like, oh, you know, they are the good guys, quote unquote. Yeah. Like, they're not going to do anything other than, like, look out for each other, which isn't... Not isn't the way it goes, but by the end of the film, you don't know. Like, you are questioning.
It
like,
ends on the note of like, is she technically still a child? And the last mum and child alone in a car. Like, what's gonna happen? Is she gonna have this desire to kill her own mum as well?
And like, will your fears about this like childhood trauma of yours have been like, am I a mistake? Do I even belong here?
Mm.
Will they be validated? Like, will they be validated by your mum being like,
I think you might kill me. I'm
just
not you
think
car.
You're going to kill me. I'm going to leave you.
We should run through the kills.
Yeah.
Because a very early question we had was like, are any of the kids going to die in this movie? Like, is this going to pull punches? And like,
I would say the most fundamental part of this film where you assume it's going to bitch out and thank God it doesn't is you're like, none of these kids are going to die. Eliza, do any of the children in the children die?
Practically all of the children are
we
killed
liked
off
the children from 2008.
This movie was like so ballsy.
It killed all the kids.
I have to say,
barely any off screen.
Yeah, but a few of them died in like the same way, which was sort of like getting pushed onto something sharp. And that was gross and that was gnarly, but I was like, yeah, you already did that. Like, they kind of cheated and did the same thing twice.
Because there also was that element with the push of – with the push of – the first time it happens, it's perfect because it allows for that space between, like, I was defending myself. I did not want them to die. I didn't know that was there. And I did know that was there. I wanted you to die. Like, you don't really know. But the thing that, you know, for me, First Omen did it really well as well. The original Omen film, you can't call it the First Omen, the original Omen, very famous for its ending being you're about to kill evil, you're about to end this whole ordeal, the horror movie will end right here, but your morality is you would not stab a child.
I mean, there's literally the horror movie, Who Can Kill a Child?
Yeah.
Like, they put it in the title.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like, that is sort of one of the, if we're talking about characters having to make thorny choices, that's one of them. And
even if you were certain that this wasn't really your child anymore, if you're like, something's happened, this kid is demonic, it's got some like evil virus, like it still looks exactly like your child that you brought into the world.
Yeah.
And would you be able to override that parental instinct and save your own life?
Yeah, totally. So we talked a bit about like visually and stuff. It feels a bit cheap at times. Mm. Sometimes it feels a bit like not cover it, like, it's not shot for coverage, but like it has to do some kind of unconventional editing to make some stuff work. But there is really good, would you agree there's really good tension building to really effective horror?
Yes. Whenever it was cutting between like different areas of this snowy house and you knew something was about to happen, like your breath was like caught in your throat. And then also just through sound design, I guess, really, whenever there was a kill or something, the moments after that felt so like fraught and just like all the characters were frozen and trying to deal with what they're just saying. And we were like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah, like, we had multiple time. Where we just like
it's
were
a really
so
impactful movie.
Caught off guard.
Yeah.
I think it does one, a really good. Oh, sorry, yeah, I know the one we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
But sorry, I keep bringing up The Omen. It just does like remind me that I'm like, yeah, with a story about kids, it is a really good idea to make horror that's a result of like, when you're surrounded by innocence or like something that's so pure, the idea that that moment could go wrong is so, like, it just sits outside of reality. And multiple of the kills in this utilize like a cross cutting where, like, you know, at the same time as there's a really stern conversation, uncomfortable conversation happening in the house, on the outside, you will start to realize that the kids are setting up a murder plot. Do you want to describe this first one?
The dad is tobogganing towards... The dad has been sent on a toboggan down the hill by two of the kids while another is dragging a tiny little red wagon with like a sharpened hook on it towards directly into his path, slicing his throat and cutting a gash in his head so his scalp is flapping open.
It's so good.
So he's like riding around in the snow. The one that I think shocked us, and we maybe hadn't even seen a bit of gore like this.
And it was because it was really random. Like, yeah. It happened really quickly.
Is the mum on the climbing frame?
So there's a mum and she's like, again, the kids have started doing crazy shit and there's a degree of, you know, some characters like the teenage girl, she's like, no, they're not the kids. The kids can stay away. The others are like, get away from me. I have to go find my daughter.
The sisters are starting to really judge each other. Like the hippie woo-woo kind of mom is like, you're a monster. I can't believe like
they're your children.
You're hitting these kids. You're trying to get them or whatever.
Exactly. So one of them is she goes outside and like sees her son is on top of sort of like a monkey bars.
Thing, yeah.
And she's slowly,
he's crying and screaming.
Slowly climbing up the ladder. And every step she takes, he takes a step back.
He, like, scoots away and she's like, come to me, it's okay. Like,
and your tension is directed towards her getting closer to him and him getting further away. And then suddenly, from out of frame, these little hands come out, grab her legs and
topple her backwards while her leg is trapped between rungs. So when she falls backward, the momentum, of her heel causes her leg to be forced against one of the rungs and her like shin snaps and it's so fucking gnarly. Like she's just dangling backwards and it's like, it's so sudden.
It's so disgusting. Any sort of like sudden bone snap is cursed. And just to quickly go back to the first murder plot you said, with the one the toboggan.
Perv dad, toboggan, neck sled dead.
Yeah, neck sled dead. I really love how that one captures that like, kids do, it's the classic death for, you know, hey, dad, watch this. And you're like, yeah, no, that's great, son. Like without actually, you know, when you like want to do a flip off the diving board and your kid's saying like, watch. And you're like, yeah, that looks good. Like throughout the earlier bits where they're playing outside, the kids have been doing these little games that you're like, yeah, awesome. That sounds great. And then through the tense cross cutting of that bit, you realize they were plotting when they were doing that.
A Rube Goldberg, like a little, basically like a war games maneuver.
They were setting up a strategy to kill him. And the whole, and like, you know, they were doing little drawings before and you were like, oh yeah, cool. Like, you know, coverage of kids doing kid things. And you're like, no, that was the murder plot. Like, that's just so good.
Who was your favorite of the kids? Scary kid.
Probably the little girl with the beanie.
Yeah.
Because they had a little murder tent that I found really scary to go into.
Yeah. And she cut open her dad's stomach and put a baby doll in there.
Like, the idea of like the way kids like take apart their Barbies and take apart stuff and just slap it together.
And they're trying to understand where they came from. It's actually beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. They're actually I have a deeply curious young girl. She wanted to play with her toys and today that was just her dad's body.
Intestines were the toys.
Who were you to tell her she's wrong? I loved it. I think it's like a film that for what it is kind of perfect. It's probably a bit like you kind of know what you're getting, but I think it's inventive enough. Those horror elements and set pieces were like really, at multiple times we were saying out loud, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, like caught you off guard. I think it had enough interest in like the dynamic of parents at Christmas, the different choices you make in parenting your children, the amount of responsibility that children present. Like, are you going to be selfish? Are you going to, you know, step up to that responsibility? Like, I think all of that stuff that takes someone with a sensitivity to those ideas to let them shine. I think they're all here. I would really recommend it.
This was like a gnarly little movie. It reminded me of Eden Lake or like Speak No Evil or something like that, where it's like the social aspect and they're trapped in the middle of nowhere. I'm really glad you brought this to my attention. But you know what? It wasn't all that Christmassy. I have to complain.
I feel like it's more Christmassy than Day of the Beast.
No. There's like Christmas carols in that. In this,
I feel like we disagree on the Wikipedia on what page, Christmas is.
It says the children is blah, 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 set around the New Year holiday.
You always think it's more Christmassy when you see Santa,
Wedge, and I see Santa,
you need to see an elf skip along the sleigh.
I think it sort of does need to take place on Christmas Day, or
it needs to feel like Christmas, and it feels like Christmas.
It
does.
It feels like winter holidays. Sure.
It feels like
I wish the kids had been yelling and screaming about their toys a bit more. That would have been enough for me.
You're right that it could have been like they've gotten new toys. There's that distinct feeling to it. But the actual idea of like, even if it was, you know, it doesn't feel like a random family getaway.
No.
It feels like the time of
the
year.
The annual thing when we all get together.
It feels like, you know, you can imagine them having just come from work, like just gotten off work like the day before, and then be like, oh, we're driving up tomorrow night. Or you can feel this sense that it's the end of the year, that the kids are really, really excited because
but they don't know each other that well.
What is Christmas if not kids being like, this is the best time of year, and adults being like, I'm so tired.
Yeah.
Like, that element of
I'm just
performance
whinging in the context of our marathon. I really enjoyed this movie.
But in the context of our marathon, I think Day of the Beast feels less Christmassy.
No, it's so much more Christmassy. It's about the birth of the Antichrist. It mentions virgins and three wise men and blah, blah, blah. It's so much more Christmassy.
And they have a Christmas fate in it and stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
It's true, it's true. I just think maybe the element of a Christmas story that most interests me is the idea of something that in theory is sold to you as like Christmas is like the veneer of Christmas. Christmas is about goodness,
it's about
happiness,
family,
joy, tidings, family, togetherness. Yeah. And then that idea of like when you're in the pits of it, you're like,
or as soon as something goes wrong, and it goes very wrong, like someone dies. But
oh, totally. But there's even like just, you know, before the kid stuff happens, like there's just
tension.
And it's not that they're like, I don't want to be here entirely, but it's just the like, constant
just the misery
tension
of adulthood.
Constant bickering. People, you know, politely nodding, and then later on at night when you're in the
bedroom.
Can
you believe her? Blah blah blah.
Yeah,
like, the mum being like, "Did you read that article I sent you about vaccines and autism, whatever?" You're like,
and you're like, "Yeah, totally." And then as you said later on with your husband, you're like, "Oh my god!" Like
my sister is unbelievable.
To me,
right.
is the true spirit of Christmas. So I think I went into this thinking that I'd be like, these are two films set at Christmas that aren't as much about it as last week's films. But I'm like, hey, anything's better than whatever the fuck Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2 was doing. So
these are much more evenly matched movies.
They are.
They're both very different genres. Like, we were talking about how Dia de la Bestia was like not actually fucked up at all. It was more like a Ghostbusters or a comedy. That ended on quite a light note. Like, they're very different movies, but they're both very, I would really recommend them. If you're like,
say,
I don't want to watch Gremlins or Krampus or some horror bullshit this Christmas, watch one of these. Like, they will impress you.
I was going to say, I would say my main thing for today is that both of these are films that I would find easy recommends.
Yeah.
Almost like films that there aren't many contexts in which it wouldn't hit. You know what I mean? I love Christmas Evil, but there are certain people that might not like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I would find it a bit slow or something. Whereas these are really entertaining.
They pop and I love them. Yeah, amazing.
Hell
so,
yeah.
Two down. We have one more.
One more Sleep Till Christmas. One more episode of our season screaming.
I can't wait.
No.
Ooh,
have you been doing
that's
last
Mrs. Claus.
Have you been doing, you said you were going to try and incorporate Santa laugh into whenever you laugh. Did you do that at all?
Yeah, every time I do it, you comment on it.
Really?
Maybe your shame is killing the spirit of Christmas in this house.
I'm sorry.
How's Santa going to come now? You're turning me into a Grinch.
Ah! I reckon next year we do Grinchmas.
I was just about to say, like, again, I don't think there's enough Christmas horror movies that are worth talking about. But
we'll find new
every
ones.
Year, are we going to do a midnight marathon of Christmas horror?
No,
I don't think
next
so.
Year we do Grinchmas Part 2. Did we ever tell you about this Grinchmas last year?
What did we do for Christmas last year, Eliza?
Oh, this was so brutal. On Christmas Day itself, we ended up being free at night, and all Noah and Darcy and I, we had green eggnog and we watched Grinch Media for like 6 hours. Like, we watched the original cartoon, we watched the Jim Carrey Grinch, and then we watched the Matthew Morrison TV live musical of the Grinch. And like,
which I would love to talk about on this show.
Yeah, I also have a lot to like think about with the Grinch, where it's like, what is he? What's his deal?
I like that we talk about feeling a lot on this show.
Okay, good.
Like, there is something about certain media where you're like, I don't care what it tells me it is. Mm. There's another thing it's doing that
you can't deny.
And the Matthew Morrison Grinch one, you're like, you cannot feel good after watching that. Like, you can be amused and entertained.
Just that it's meant to be cheer, holiday cheer.
It just feels dark. It feels really, really dark. Mm. Yeah, no, I have to agree. Well, the Grinch is just like a children's version of I have to agree. Grinch. That's so dumb.
Were you going
to
say something else? Or?
I was going to say the Grinch. What's that confused about the Grinch? He's just Scrooge, but for children.
No, I think he's interesting and he changes with each movie. That's just, well, you'll hear us talk about this in like a year.
I guess that's true. They're like, I can't wait that long. I need to know.
Don't think about it for like 300 days or
yeah,
so.
Yeah, hang tight. Hang tight until our next final part of this season with a very, very special, very exciting guest that we're really excited to spring on you. Yeah, it's something we've been setting up for a while and we're really keen for it. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Letterboxd. Make sure you vote on that poll. It's pinned to the top of our feed. So that's amazing. Where you can make your voice heard. Ho, ho, ho.
Ding-a-ling, 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 ding-a-ling. Santa with knife, elf with
sir,
the gun.
Sir, I want to buy these shoes.
He's
going to
kill children. For my mama. Please.
How impressive, impressive that New Song wrote a song that can seamlessly fit into any other song.
Yeah.
Try it.
Okay. Sing wait, am I song. Doing Christmas shoes or are you doing?
What do you want to do?
I'll do random song.
Okay, go.
Baby, baby, baby.
Sir, I want to buy these shoes.
Baby, baby, baby.
For my mama,
no,
please.
Like, baby. Baby,
it's Christmas
baby.
Eve and these shoes are just her style. There you go. They wrote it so it'd have the same ending.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I know. They're really good. Really, really good songwriters.
Can you actually think of a song that would match perfectly?
Let's do a Glee-esque.
Mashup.
Mashup.
It's quite slow, I
like
guess.
A dad rock song.
It's got a ballady thing. Okay, you know what? I actually am quite confident. I remember thinking this on the week, that you could mash it up with a Bon Iver song. I think that you could mash it up really well with... Do you know Bon Iver's stuff particularly well?
I know his first album.
You could probably... I don't know about the first album.
Wow,
I was thinking
of... Millennial.
The last track of his second album is actually somewhat similar in instrumentation in that like it feels like it's kind of deliberately...
Are you willing
schmaltzy
to make it
happen? Drawing from a like soft rock, slightly schmaltzy vibe, but with this like hectic auto tune over the top and stuff.
The question is whether you're willing to make it happen.
Are you adding this to your Christmas workload? No way.
This is now priority number one. Everything comes second. I think the bigger one is there a song about shoes that we could add it to?
I want to put on my Christmas shoes.
Could you do these boots are made for walking?
Blue suede shoes.
Yeah, blue suede shoes.
Is there another shoe song?
Shoes.
So I lay the money down.
I'm walking on sunshine.
I'm walking on Christmas shoes.
These Christmas shoes are made for walking. And
that's just
what
they do.
One of these days your mom's going to die, but she'll be wearing the shoes.
But Jesus will say, damn, you look so good, boo.
Bye.